You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, August 3rd. Sorry about the bumper music glitches there. We're trying to get things worked out, some technical difficulties. But my pleasure to be with you on this beautiful Wednesday, this hump day. Looking forward to my guest next hour. She is Eve Tushnet. Eve, who authors the book Gay and Catholic, Accepting My Sexuality, Living My Faith, Finding Community. It's really an excellent book. I've just kind of gotten a couple of chapters into. I had Eve on a couple of months ago. She's got a fascinating story. Somebody who was really grew up in a largely agnostic household, a nominal Jew, came out to her parents as a lesbian while she was in high school. And then later on, while she was in college at Yale, of all places, through her involvement in debate and some other intellectual experiences, she began to encounter Catholics and engaging them in conversation, or they would engage her. And she found herself drawn more and more, not only to faith in God, but to the Christian God, and yes, to becoming a Catholic. And so Eve Tushnet went through this really remarkable journey of coming into the Catholic faith. Of course, she had been living openly as a lesbian and at ease with that for some time, but she accepted Catholic teaching, the Catholic vision of human sexuality, that erotic sexual expression was oriented toward marriage between a man and a woman. In other words, that this is the nature of sexuality, what marriage is by its very nature, and therefore to enter into the Catholic Church, she wasn't going to be a, as we sometimes call them, cafeteria Catholic, where you pick and choose that which you will follow and that which you won't. Unfortunately, there seem to be a lot of those, and we probably are, many of us are those from time to time. But even though she didn't fully understand, in all its complexities, Catholic teaching on human sexuality, she accepted it and made that decision. And yet at the same time, she still had friends in the gay community. She still, you know, felt comfortable identifying herself as gay. And so she came out with a book a few years ago called Gay and Catholic, as I said. And so one of the things I want to talk to her about, I was fascinated to read her story of when she came out in terms of her self experience as a lesbian when she was in high school and adolescence to her parents. And she talks a little bit about what that process is like for parents, in that it involves, in a sense, the death of certain dreams that one has for one's child. But then she goes on to make a pretty, I think, very insightful comment for someone as young as she is and someone who herself is not a parent. And she says that all parents have to go through that. It's just not the parents of children who come out as gay, but all parents have to, in a sense, lay down their dreams for their particular child with the knowledge and the acceptance that they can't control who their child becomes. So I thought it was a very brilliant insight. So we'll talk to Eve about that a little bit later during the second hour. And we'll also talk to her about a piece that she wrote, because she's also been very forthright about her struggle with alcoholism. And so we'll talk about that as well. She says, wrote in one of her blog pieces, five things she wished someone had told her or wished she had known about alcohol before she got into it. So look forward to that interview in the second hour. And if you miss it, of course, you can always go to the podcast. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to be on the program today, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can always post a response on Facebook or on Twitter. I want to get into some other things, of course, today, our regular segments like the What Were You Thinking Awards, looking back in history and spinning the Dollar Catechism wheel. I also want to get back into this idea of the path between rigorism and laxity. About life in the so-called real world, Hillary Clinton versus Tim Kaine on the issue of abortion, which they actually have some differences there, even though they're on the same ticket, and other public Catholics and shark jumping. All that and more in the program today. And in the next segment, I'll give you the question of the day that you can weigh in on. It has to do with a certain home decorator who's having a birthday today. So we'll keep you guessing on that one, unless you've been on Facebook and already seen the question. Anyway, so our scripture today, by the way, I hope you had a good night last night. Good day. I had another one of these evangelization focus groups at a parish just east of Lexington where we broadcast from us. As I tell you, in the early morning hours, I'm a radio show host, but during the meat of the day, I am an employee of the diocese, Catholic Diocese of Lexington, Kentucky, and I'm the director of family life and evangelization. One of the things we've been doing in the evangelization office, I call it the evangelization office to sound impressive. It's really me in a rather cluttered, messy, small office. But I do have some excellent leadership who are involved in the diocese and something we call the Evangelization Commission. And one of the things we're doing this summer is we're trying to get out to the parishes, to many of the parishes throughout the diocese, or at least a broad geographical swath, and to listen to what people are doing, to listen to what's already happening in evangelization, to sort of gauge attitudes, where the needs are, so that this Evangelization Commission that I'm a part of, that we can work to build up and strengthen and encourage what's already happening and see what resources that we can supply. As I have told several of these groups, I know there can be a tendency sometimes. We believe in a hierarchical church, and that's a good thing. People are sometimes dismissive of the hierarchy, right? As though somehow the church could get by without it. When the word hierarchy simply means sacred order, and so there is a structure of the church. The church, we don't have independent congregations. We are all connected to one another. And there's always this sort of healthy tension in the Catholic Church. I think a tension that's meant to be there between the local nature of the church and the universal nature of the church. As with so many things Catholic, it's not about either or, it's about both and. The church is both local and universal. Sometimes we get sort of the things a little weighted too heavily on one side, and sometimes there can be a tendency at the universal level, or let's just say within our diocese, a diocese being a geographic area of the church, for there to be too much of a sort of top-down movement from a diocesan office to the local parish. And what can happen is it's sort of like the old saw about, we're here from the government and we're here to help. it's almost like if you ever watched the old TV show MASH, you always got the sense that Hawkeye and BJ, or Hawkeye and Trapper John, bristled under directives from on high because they often seemed so tone deaf and out of touch. Sometimes at a local church level, there can be that feeling. So we try to avoid that. Instead of saying, we've got a great program of evangelization you need to incorporate. Here's more work for you to go out and to listen. Because the truth is, our local parishes are all, at one level or another, doing the work of sharing the good news of Jesus. But how are they doing it? How do they want to do it better? How can we help them? And so forth. So I had an opportunity last night to be with some people from several parishes gathered at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Winchester, Kentucky, just east of Lexington. Had a great time of talking and sharing about evangelization. I'm always energized because, one of the first question I ask in these facilitated focus groups, which we record and we're going to compare all these responses, is, evangelization literally means sharing the good news. What's the good news we have to share as Catholics? I think it's an important question for us to ask ourselves, because so much of what we do sometimes can be, this is what we've always done. Instead of understanding that at the heart of what we're about is mission. The church, by her nature, doesn't have a mission. She is a mission to the world. And we've got good news. That's the word, what the word gospel means, or evangelization, sharing the good news. What is that good news? I think the first reading today is a beautiful expression of something that is central to that good news, and we'll get into that in the second hour. As I said, question of the day coming at you, Eve Tushnet in the second hour. This is the Mike Allen Show. We will be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you are back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media here on this Wednesday, August 3rd. If you want to find out more about Breadbox Media, go to breadboxmedia.com. It's that simple. You can read about all of our different show hosts from each corner of this country, east, south, west, and north, and also across the Fruited Plain. All kind of different topics, temperaments, personalities, all across the clock and around the horn. Check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. You can listen to podcasts of shows that you've enjoyed, or parts of this one that maybe you've had to miss. Like I said, second hour, Eve Tushnet. You don't want to miss that conversation. If you can't catch it live, you want to catch the podcast, you can check those out through the podcast link at the Breadbox Media website, or through iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean. You could even subscribe as well. You can also become a friend of your favorite show. We've got several who are supporting this particular show, and through their contribution, receive exclusive access to a certain online content, your way of coming on board and partnering. And all friends of the show are going to offer a Google Hangout once a month where we can talk a little bit about the show, and you can weigh in with your suggestions and what you like, don't like, all the rest. So check that all out at breadboxmedia.com. Interesting question of the day. You've seen the old show, I'm sure, Extreme Home Makeover, which is always pretty fascinating to me, and something that made me a little envious, to be honest, because usually my home can use an extreme home makeover. One of the things I've discovered, the perils of home ownership. Yes, I'd always heard of the joys of home ownership, but the perils of home ownership. Something's always going haywire, going wrong, whatever. It takes pretty regular maintenance, especially when you have an older home like we have. And I saw that it was Martha Stewart's 75th birthday today. Martha Stewart, who is probably both the inspiration and the bane of many people, particularly many women, who put pressure on themselves to be the ultimately skilled home decorator, career manager, all the rest. So, but I'm asking, imagine Martha Stewart on her 75th birthday today. Imagine she offered to do an extreme home makeover, to redecorate one of your rooms for free. Which would you choose and why? So which room would it be? If Martha Stewart, and by the way, she's going to cover all the costs. Now, she's not going to knock out walls and stuff, so let's not get carried away. But she's going to redecorate one of your rooms. Which one would you prefer? Would you prefer it to be your bedroom? Would you prefer it to be your kitchen? I think that's where I'm going. Our kitchen needs help big time. So if Martha Stewart could come in and do a number on our... I mean, there's something about having a nice, crisp, clean, bright kitchen, you know, with everything in its place. I kind of like that. I asked my wife this question last night. She said the bedroom. She'd like the bedroom to be redecorated. So if you want to weigh in on that, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you could post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Sports-wise, not a lot going on, but we are in this sort of lull here. We're getting ready to have the Olympics, but we're also getting ready to start football. That's right. Football is in the air. Yes, it may be hotter than Blue Blazes, but the pigskins are flying and things are starting to amp up. In college football, NFL will have exhibition season starting here really soon. And should be fun. And I noticed that the Associated Press has ranked the top 25 all-time programs, the best programs in college football over the past 80 seasons. Now, not surprisingly, my Kentucky Wildcats, nowhere near the top 25, of course. Actually, it looks like they ranked the top. Oh, my goodness, I'm embarrassed here. I gotta see where my Kentucky Wildcats play out here, because they went all the way down through. Looks like about 100. Wow, that's embarrassing. 68th for my Kentucky Wildcats. What's even more embarrassing is that the Louisville Cardinals, our arch rival, ranked 62nd all time. At least we have Indiana beat, who are down there around 72. But number one, let's see whether we, well, let's say the top five here. You can tell me if you agree. The top five college football programs of all time. Number five, Southern California. The USC Trojans. Don't call them Southern Cal. They don't like that. Certainly, absolutely. What a great history. Number four, Alabama. Ooh, Alabama fans aren't going to like that. Alabama fans don't like being anywhere but number one. Number three, Notre Dame. Newt Rockne, Ara Parseghian, Rudy, Notre Dame with its great history. Number two, Oklahoma, in terms of the greatest football programs of all time. And number one, this is pretty tough to say because these particular fans are as obnoxious as Kentucky basketball fans are, which is saying a lot. And that is the Ohio State Buckeyes, ranked by the AP as the number one football program, college football program of all time. I tell you what, the Michigan comes in at number seven. They're not going to be happy about that either. And then Texas eight. Let's see, Nebraska six, Michigan seven, Texas eight, Florida State nine, and Florida number 10. And on down from there. That Ohio State-Michigan game this year should be something else. Jim Harbaugh now in season two, I think preseason ranked third. In fact, after I leave here today, I'm going to breakfast today with a couple of friends. We do our football picks for our favorite teams, one an Iowa fan and one a Michigan fan. So I'm interested to see what my Michigan fan friend thinks his Wolverines are going to do this year, because according to the polls, they're going to do really, really well. So interesting. There was also another ranking I saw, not ranking college football programs, but ranking the top current quarterbacks in the NFL. This was on Real Clear Sports. This is by David Steele of the Sporting News. And Mr. Tom Brady, who I believe, if I remember this correctly, when we talk about this in the second segment, yeah, today's his birthday. No, I'm sorry, yesterday was Tom Brady's birthday. Yesterday turned 39 years young, and Tom Brady tops Mr. David Steele's ranking of the top 25 quarterbacks in the NFL. Kind of hard to argue with that, especially when I think you can make the case that Tom Brady may be the best NFL quarterback of all time. So I think Cam Newton came in at third, maybe Aaron Rodgers second. I'll look that over and maybe I can talk a little bit more about that tomorrow. All right, so let's get into our What Were You Thinking awards for the day, because we've got one. One is baseball related. I've paid off and on attention to my Cincinnati Reds, of course. Homer Bailey, the unfortunately named pitcher of the Cincinnati Reds, who had been out for a year and a half, recovering from what they call Tommy John surgery, named after the old Dodger pitching great, who had to have a a remake of his shoulder. I think that's what Tommy John surgery is. Anyway, Homer Bailey having that and having his debut back on the mound this past Sunday, he pitched really well. Mentally, though, not quite so sharp. There was a situation where the Padres, who they were playing, had the bases loaded after Homer Bailey walked a batter to load the bases. And Homer Bailey, in his frustration over walking the bases full, turned around with his back to the plate, I guess cussing himself, whatever. Meanwhile, the runner on third, Will Myers, took note of Homer's inattention and just ran home. Crossed the plate. Wasn't even really a play at the plate. Now, stealing home is one thing when the pitcher is tuned in. That's impressive. But Homer, that's a basic rule in baseball. When you're the pitcher, you do not turn your back to the crowd. All right, our second nominee for our What Were You Thinking Award, Go Dumb or Go Home, as we like to say, is actually from down under, from Australia. A Newtown resident and teacher at Pomparog High School was arrested Monday after police said he let the air out of a student's tires in the school's parking lot. Listen, I understand students can get you frustrated. Believe me, I understand that you can get one particular student who seems to major in getting under your skin. Still, you don't go out and let the air out of a student's tires. Evidently, the student was parked in the teacher's parking lot. That was his transgression. And so Edward Kimball, the teacher, decided he would teach the student a lesson by letting all the air out of his tires. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we'll hold off for the winner. We'll get the winner of the What Were You Thinking Award when we come back from the break. But that's pretty good. I on the one hand, I lift that up as the What Were You Thinking Award. On the other, I'm thinking, man, if you could just do that without getting caught. I could think of a student or two over the years. I might have found some sinister delight in letting the air out of their tires. Anyway, more when we come back from the break. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, August 3rd. Again, my question of the day, happy birthday to Martha Stewart, 75 years old today, and has kind of rebuilt her name and her image and her brand, I guess, after her unfortunate stint in prison. But my question is if she volunteered at no charge to redecorate one room in your house, where would you want her to start? Now, like I said, the limitation here is she's not going to knock out walls, okay? But other than that, I mean, she may give some free furniture, whatever. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Where would you like her to start? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. Is not only Martha Stewart's birthday, in a few minutes we'll go back in history as well. But let's we've still got one more What Were You Thinking Award, as we like to say, spanning the globe for examples of humanity not putting their best thinking foot forward. Go dumb or go home, as we like to say. This one from the state of Florida, again, always a ready source of these What Were You Thinking Award nominees. As it says here, man with big pot plant in bed of pickup truck, unable to avoid detection. If you stop this from me off the beat, website here. If you stop your pickup truck after running over a traffic sign, deputies may cut you some slack. But if you speed away and have a fully grown marijuana plant in your pickup truck's bed, not so much. According to the arrest affidavit, the latter happened about 12:45 a.m. a couple weeks ago in Vero Beach. An Indian River County Sheriff's deputy spotted a Toyota Tacoma pickup run over a stop sign at 101st Court and 87th Street. The Toyota's lights were then turned off and it sped west. The deputy, of course, stopped the truck. Upon walking up the vehicle on the to the vehicle on the driver's side, I observed a fully grown marijuana plant located in the bed of the truck in plain view, an affidavit states. The driver said he was sorry he hit the sign. Really? I mean, again, you can have your principled convictions about the efficacy of laws against pot smoking, okay? But in a state where marijuana, recreational marijuana, is illegal, is that really where you want to be, riding around a truck? And not only that, if you're riding around a truck with a fully grown pot plant in the bed, I would be very mindful that I obeyed all the traffic laws, if you know what I'm saying. So Joshua Jacobs, you received the What Were You Thinking Award for the day. Congratulations. Don't ever say nothing good happened to you. We're, of course, now less than 100 days, I believe, until the 2016 presidential election. Still trying to figure out what I'm going to do. As I've said, I can't vote for either major party candidate. So I've still got to find out who's going to be on the ballot here in my home state of Kentucky and make my decisions. We've all got to make our decisions. That's the nature of conscience. It's a great liberty, but it's also a great responsibility. Anyway, but I saw a piece yesterday now that it appears as though Hillary Clinton has some momentum while Donald Trump seems to be shooting himself in the foot. So an interesting piece in The Atlantic yesterday, how abortion divides Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. As the subheading says, the Democratic presidential nominee and her running mate have different views on federal funding for the procedure. What does that mean for the campaign? And it's really all about a reference to the Hyde Amendment, which was a 1976 provision that has been consistently attached to bills funding the Department of Health and Human Services since then for those 40 years, which limits federal funding for abortions. Since 1994, Medicaid has only covered the procedure, this according to Emma Green of The Atlantic, in cases of rape, incest, or a health threat to the woman's life. And for social conservatives who oppose abortion, this ban on funding is an important feature of federal health policy. I don't like that phrase there, though, for social conservatives who oppose abortion. I'm not sure being a conservative is the proper definition of someone who opposes abortion. Would you call someone who opposed slavery, for example, also an injustice against the dignity of the human person? Would opposition to slavery have signified conservatism? I would actually argue that opposing abortion is progressivism. The British Catholic G.K. Chesterton talked about the word progressive and how it really made no sense if you have not defined where it is you're heading. How can you know if you're making progress if you don't know the goal? Progressive is a relative term. And I would say that those who advocated for the abolition of slavery in the United States or in other places in the world were truly progressive, because they were wanting to leave behind something that was not reflective of our human dignity and move toward a more full expression of human dignity. I would say those who oppose abortion are progressives in the truest sense, but I digress. Anyway, in contrast, Emma Green points out the 2016 Democratic Party platform, for the first time in the party's history, the platform includes a call to repeal Hyde, the Hyde Amendment. according to a campaign representative. Hillary Clinton has made her opposition to the Hyde Amendment clear out on the campaign trail. But on Friday, her running mate, Tim Kaine, said on CNN that he supports the Hyde Amendment. Now, we've talked about this a little bit before in the program, and you've probably, if you've read anything about Tim Kaine is a practicing Catholic, is not bashful at all about talking about his faith, his growing up, going to a Jesuit school, working with the Jesuit missions in Honduras, and so forth, that his faith shapes and guides the way he governs. He's made that very clear. And yet at the same time, whereas he used to describe himself as a pro-life Democrat, somewhere along the line, he decided that political mobility was more important to him than holding the line on a pro-life viewpoint. This is why, by the way, there are a lot of pro-life people are suspicious of pro-life Democrats. Now, I've had Rebecca Hamilton, who's a state legislator from, well, she's retired now from the state of Oklahoma, and she's a pro-life Democrat on, and she's the real deal. I mean, we've talked about it many times, and I'm one who believes there should be pro-life people on both sides of the aisle in politics. So I'm all for pro-life Democrats as long as they have the Constitution to withstand the pressure of the party apparatus for them to go along to get along. Tim Kaine has not had that internal fortitude. He has found that it's politically expedient to play the Mario Cuomo card, which is, I'm personally opposed, but I would never impose my will on someone else. Now, interestingly enough, though, he seems to be holding the line at the Hyde Amendment. His compromise will only go so far. And so here you have together, paired on a ticket, the Democratic ticket, Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine with two different points of view. And as Emma Green points out in this Atlantic piece, and I'll put a link to this on the show's Facebook page, although pro-choice groups have praised the Clinton campaign for its full support of abortion, that's, yes, that's an understatement. Even liberal sources have said that Clinton's campaign is the most vocally pro-abortion in the history of the presidency. She has been unabashed, not simply in conceding abortion as a regrettable alternative, but a full-throated positivity about abortion. Anyway, and they've praised her campaign, but there have been some concern, I guess, expressed by some pro-abortion, or as they call themselves, pro-choice persons, about Tim Kaine. The Kaine team maintained that the senator has not changed his views. He's always supported Hyde. He has also made it clear, this is Karen Finney, communications director for Tim Kaine, he has also made it clear that he is fully committed to Hillary Clinton's policy agenda, which he understands includes a repeal of Hyde. What? He shares the concern that low-income women and women of color often face barriers to health care, and for this reason he has been a strong supporter of Planned Parenthood and other programs and services that ensure the full range of reproductive health care services for all women. As Emma Green writes, although Kaine has taken a different position on Hyde than Clinton, both politicians have had to reconcile their own moral views on abortion with public policy. And both really have, as First Lady, evidently, Hillary Clinton actually once characterized abortion as wrong, all the while trying to pass a health care reform bill that was intended to mandate insurance coverage for the procedure. And so it seems like both of them have, at least at some point in their lives, had some reservations about abortion. Now they have gone all in, it appears. At least Kaine's still holding out on the Hyde Amendment. But anyway, when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about other politicians who have jumped the shark or are jumping the shark when it comes to sacrificing their faith for their own political expediency. So we'll get into all that, including our own vice president. But believe me, he's not the only one. And we'll also look back in history on this day here when we come back from the break, August 3rd, and find out some other things that have occurred. In the meantime, hold tight. Again, if you want to check out all of our programming, go to breadboxmedia.com. Question of the day, Martha Stewart, which room you wanted to start in, she's going to redecorate your house. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this August 3rd. Hope you're doing well. My question of the day, Martha Stewart, 75 years old today. Let's say Martha Stewart, who's still got a little spring in her step, wants to redecorate your house. One room, actually. She's offered to do one room for free. Now, you can't knock out any walls, but you can. She'll fund it, paint, furniture, whatever, which room you wanted to take on. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in, 573-4-BREAD-4. Or anything else we've talked about today, you can chime in. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts or your responses on Facebook or on Twitter through social media. Always an option. Let's look back at history on this day, August 3rd throughout the ages. What are some other things that have happened besides the birth of Martha Stewart back in 1941? On 435 AD, on this date, deposed Patriarch of Constantinople, Nestorius, considered the originator of Nestorianism, exiled by the Byzantine Emperor Theodosius II to a monastery in Egypt. Well, who was Nestorius? Nestorius was really one whose teaching prompted a vigorous debate at the Council of Ephesus, I believe, that established that Mary is, in fact, the Theotokos. That's a big Greek word that means the God-bearer. Sometimes the title given is Mother of God. What was Nestorius' claim? That Jesus, the man, was born of Mary, but that his divine nature was joined to the human Jesus after his birth at some point. Whereas in the Catholic understanding, now keep in mind, sometimes we look back with great hindsight, these early centuries of the church, I mean, this is when we see evidence of the Holy Spirit inspiring and guarding and building it upon the rock of Peter so that the gates of hell would not prevail. Because Nestorius' false teaching, which won many adherents, which seemed like the more conservative option, ultimately was swept aside. Not that those ideas still don't abound. But in fact, Catholic teaching is from the moment of Jesus' conception, the eternal, the co-eternal Son of God was joined with human flesh. He assumed a human nature. And so the one to whom Mary gave birth was, in fact, truly God. God the Son, but truly God. 1492 on this day, Christopher Columbus set sail with his three ships, Santa Maria, Pinta, and the Niña, for what he thought would be the Indies. In 1900 on this day, the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company founded. 1923 on this day, all baseball games canceled following the death of President Warren G. Harding. And, of course, Calvin Coolidge became the vice president, considered by some Calvin Coolidge to be one of the great presidents, economic presidents in American history. I don't know about that, though. I mean, yes, great prosperity in the 20s, but we know what happened afterward. Happy birthday to Tony Bennett, a guy who just whose voice never seems to age. 90 years old today. Master of duets, too. Not only a great jazz singer, but duets as well. A happy birthday to Martin Sheen, who's 76 today. Martin Sheen, who is a practicing Catholic. And I keep wanting to see that film, The Way, in which he walks the way of St. James there, that pilgrimage over in Spain. Let's see. Happy birthday, Tom Brady. We also already gave his birthday, which is today. There's some debate, I guess, over whether his birthday is today or yesterday. Anyway, 39 years old. And then on this day in 1972, Unforgiven premiered in Los Angeles, won Best Picture the following spring in 1993. Not my favorite Western. I mean, it's good. Very, very dark. some great lines in it. I love the line that when Clint Eastwood's talking to the young guy, his young accomplice who has just killed the guy sitting in an outhouse. And Eastwood says, it's a heck of a thing killing a man. You take away all he's got, all he's ever going to have. And the young kid who's trying to drown his guilt on whiskey and try to whistle past the graveyard says, guess he had it coming, though. Clint Eastwood says, we've all got it coming, kid. Like I said, it's a dark film. Anyway, 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to chime in, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. We were talking a little bit about the difference between Tim Kaine and Hillary Clinton on the issue of abortion. And their differences, Kaine believes, yes, that even though he's personally opposed abortion, he is, he is for it being legal. However, he supports the Hyde Amendment, which bars federal funding of most abortions, whereas Hillary Clinton is a strong advocate for repealing the Hyde Amendment. Emma Green ends up her story from The Atlantic on this. From a purely political perspective, Kaine's stance seems like the worst possible strategy. It has angered Clinton's progressive supporters. Say there's that word progressive again. Whereas the conservative, she earlier wrote in her piece, pro-lifers are conservatives, but pro-aborts are progressive. All depends on what you want to make progress toward, again. Includes groups, let's see, it has angered Clinton's progressive supporters, including groups from NARAL, which has expressed disappointment in Kaine's position, to Planned Parenthood, which said it strongly disagrees with Kaine on Hyde. And Kaine, whose selection as vice president was almost certainly designed to attract more moderate voters, seems unlikely to win over social conservatives with his personal support and his public capitulation on Hyde. And from the perspective of voters, Green writes, Kaine's position may not matter much for the election. A minority of voters consider abortion a critical issue. This is why I don't know. I mean, that saddens me, of course, that the majority of voters consider abortion to be a non-critical issue, because for me, it is an issue at the very top of my concerns when I vote. That's why I will not vote for Hillary Clinton. I also do not believe that Donald Trump is pro-life either. And not just because I think he's changed his story on abortion to gain adherence. You look across the board on a lot of other issues, he's far from pro-life. Anybody who's pro-torture, I'm sorry, it's not pro-life. Anyway, but what I don't understand, if you're Hillary Clinton and the minority of voters consider abortion a critical issue, you have your base already. Why go after Hyde? Why do you have to go after the Hyde Amendment? Why go so full both feet in on the abortion issue? Because the majority of the American public is uneasy about abortion. They may, even if they say that, yes, it should be legal in some cases, if, some might even say most cases, I don't know. But they're uneasy about it. They don't want to shout their abortion as one person at the Democratic Convention did. I don't understand what you have to gain here. It's only hurting you. That's what I don't get. Not that we're, speaking of Tim Kaine, there's certainly a tradition of Catholic politicians who jump the shark. You know, that jump the shark reference, of course, that reference to the Happy Days episode. It's come to have a universal meaning as a point in a television series when it, in an effort to keep ratings, ventures over into the ridiculous. And you see this happen in all kind of television shows, right? But certainly the episode out in California for Happy Days, in which Fonzie, leather jacket still on, ski jumps over a shark in the ocean. You know you've officially jumped the shark. Well, there are some politicians like Tim Kaine, I'll give you a case in point, but he's one of many who are Catholics who struggle with the place that their faith should have in shaping their political view of things. Right? I mean, and this, some of this goes back from the Catholic perspective, John F. Kennedy's speech he gave in Houston in the early 1960s, trying to, or around, I'm sorry, 1960 election year, to some Baptists trying to convince them that he wouldn't be taking a red hotline from the Pope if he was elected president, that his faith, his Catholic faith, would not be the determining factor in policy. And I guess he convinced enough of them that he got elected president. But there's been this sort of tendency now among Catholic politicians to continually insist their faith does not govern their policy. Well, here's the thing. You can actually be a Catholic without necessarily being a partisan politician. You can believe in certain aspects of the common good that are not rooted in revelation, but that are rooted actually in natural law and things that are easily observable. So yesterday, for example, you had the news breaking that Joe Biden had tweeted out a photograph of himself presiding at a same-sex wedding at his house for a couple of White House staffers. Joe Biden has made no secret of his practice of the faith, talks about carrying his rosary and so forth, and here he is, basically in open and public defiance of the Catholic understanding of marriage. By the way, and it doesn't just happen on the left. There are those on the right. Yeah. No, I know what the Catholic Church teaches about just war theory, but, you know, come on. It doesn't really work in the real world. We'll get into all that later in the next hour, but Catholic politicians jumping the shark. It's been around for some time. Joe Biden, simply the latest. New hour coming. We'll talk to Eve Tushnet. This is The Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.